The desire to picture to ourselves distant scenes and past ages is a natural instinct of the human mind. When we do this, we seem to enlarge the narrow circle of our own individual life, to pass into a wider, if visionary, world, to behold in the spirit figures which we can never see in the flesh, and to listen to voices which we can never hear with the bodily ear, because they have long fallen silent.
Welcome to The Vatican Centuries, a presentation in which we indulge this instinct to return to distant scenes and past ages. We'll be taking you on a journey back in time to rediscover some of the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican throughout the centuries.
Vatican, a word that conjures up an image of grandeur and power on the one hand, on the other, that of an awesome, intangible being.
The dictionary reduces the word Vatican to very explicit terms. Quote, the official residence of the Pope and the administrative centre of the Roman Catholic Church.
The word Vatican is said to derive from vates or vaticinator, which means a seer or prophet. The old kings of Rome were more like priests. They were in charge of religion. They celebrated the liturgy and offered sacrifices to the gods. One of these kings was Numa Pompilius, who was particularly religious. He was responsible for the foundation of the Roman state religion. The legend is that Numa used to have nightly meetings with the nymph Egeria, and it was on the Vatican Hill that he revealed these communications to the people.
You could say that the Vatican is still a place where religious communications are issued, though there's nothing legendary about them. But what about the image that the word Vatican calls to mind? Is it a place or a person, or a mysterious, faceless sort of organisation that issues solemn pronouncements every so often?
To most people, the Vatican means the Pope and St. Peter's.
And yet the Vatican is much older than both. It existed long before either St. Peter's or the Popes.
Its origins are lost in the mists of antiquity. It's as old as Rome, if not older.
Still, it's a happy thought that whatever happened in between, the Vatican started life as a sacred place.
What did the Vatican look like in those earliest times?
It was on a hill, we know. And even today, though the site has been covered with masonry for so many centuries, there are still indications of its original slope. It's highest on the north, where the Vatican Palace stands, and slopes to the south. The area covered by the Vatican is a considerable stretch of country lying between the Janiculum Hill and the Milvian Bridge on the west bank of the Tiber. The zone was known by the ancients as the Vatican Hills and Fields.
But it was not one of the seven hills of Rome, which were all to the east of the river. What's more, in remote times, there wasn't even a bridge. You had to get there by boat. Still, it wasn't entirely inaccessible, because the city had been founded at a point where the Tiber could be easily crossed, and there was an island in the middle of the river, which simplified matters.
But all in all, around the year 700 BC, when our story begins, it must have been a desolate spot. A wooded grove some distance from the river, from which you could look across to the city. At that time, just a collection of huts scattered over the seven hills. Incidentally, these are not very high, only about 100 feet. But the Romans had chosen to settle on the heights to avoid the damage from the periodical flooding of the country around the Tiber. Also to defend themselves better from the enemies and diseases that prevailed in the marshy land below.
But let's move from the place to the person and take a look at the man who started it all, the man who first gave the Vatican its religious character and made it a place of prayer for all time. This man was Numa.
We don't know why King Numa chose to cross the river to make public his supposed revelations from the nymph Egeria. Possibly it was to give them more weight. Then again, if the area was hilly, it would seem more in keeping with the solemnity of divine pronouncements.
But who was Numa Pompilius? A king or a sort of pagan pope?
When Romulus, the legendary founder of Rome, died, he was succeeded by a Sabine king, a wise and holy man named Numa Pompilius. Numa was 40 when he came to the throne, and he ruled for 43 years.
The image of him which has come down to us is of a deeply religious man, something of a philosopher and something of a saint. He has sometimes been called the priest king. More than anything else, he loved peace, and the first thing he did was to build a temple to Janus, the doors of which were to be kept shut when Rome was at peace and opened in time of war. Needless to say, throughout Numa's reign, the doors of the temple remained closed. No longer did the neighbouring cities battle at Rome's gates.
But Numa did not achieve this miracle without effort. He was well aware that the fear of enemies had kept the Romans on their good behaviour up to now. The problem was how to keep them that way.
Numa looked round and soon found his answer. Fear of the gods would keep his subjects in order. He would give them religion. Numa was fascinated by religion. It was his main interest in life. But on his succession, he found religion in a very bad state. Rome was populated by Latins, Sabines, and probably Etruscans too. Each people venerated its own set of gods, and as no one knew which was the most important, it was all rather confusing.
Numa decided to put an end to this state of religious anarchy. But he needed an alibi. So he pretended to hold nightly interviews with the nymph Egeria. She would descend from Mount Olympus while he was asleep and give him instructions. Numa transmitted these from the Vatican Hill, and on the basis of these revelations, he proceeded to organize the state religion. He purified it of its baser practices, organized colleges of priests, established an order of precedence among the various gods, and appointed those who were to carry out the ceremonies and offer the sacrifices. The temple of Vesta, goddess of the hearth, was to be served by unmarried priestesses, the Vestal Virgins, tending an undying fire. Then he drew up a religious calendar, declaring certain days to be sacred, on which no public business might be performed.
This state religion, as organized by Numa, remained essentially the same throughout the whole Roman era, until it was replaced by Christianity under Constantine.
A modern historian has defined Numa's work as one of fundamental political importance, for it allowed his successors to lead a united Roman people to victory in war, surely the last thing the peace-loving Numa would have wanted. But he and his subjects were blissfully unaware of the future, and enjoyed a tranquility which has been described for us by the Greek historian Plutarch.
One would say that the neighbouring towns have all breathed the beneficial air of a gentle, pure wind, blowing from the direction of Rome, that in men's hearts a desire for a quiet life has been born, to cultivate the land, to bring up their children in peace, to serve and honor the gods. Soon nothing else was seen but games, feasts, sacrifices, banquets. The people got to know each other. They mixed freely with one another without fear, without danger. The wisdom of Numa was such a source of good that the whole of Italy was refreshed and filled by it.
The almost mythical period of the kings of Rome lasted for some 250 years. Reliable dates for Roman history only begin in 510 BC, when Rome became a republic. But although the kings are shadowy, almost legendary figures, the accounts of their times are thought to contain some truth. And with that, we must be content.
The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.